The Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
It's not like the Bruins didn't deserve to win, that game, if you know a bounce or two goes another way, is a totally different game. And it's easy to look at a 5-1 final score and say, oh, you know, dominant win in game one. It didn't feel
way. You can do that with every game, right?
Sure.
I mean, if the Bruins came out on the losing end, you said, oh, well, we hit the post here. We just missed that chance. That, I mean, that's the way it is. But so you deal with it, and you know, you got the result. And, you know, Toronto self-destructed a little bit in the third period with some of their discipline issues. But that was a very close game, 1-1, until late in the second period. So, that has to be kept in perspective. And I know that the Bruins are doing that. I mean, I'm sure that they are. If they're not, they're foolish. But you know that Toronto is going to be good today, and you need to be even better than you were in game one.
Mike Babcock's challenging his team to be more competitive. But going back to game one, everything, the hinge point was really in that second period, especially early on, because the Leafs had weathered the storm. They had tied the game up at one. They go into the second period. They had a couple of power play chances, unable to capitalize. Had a couple of other offensive chances that they couldn't finish on. Mitch Marner is one guy in particular. I think that may have come on the man advantage. The Bruins were able to weather that storm and that opportunity for the Leafs there in the second period. Then they get a power play chance. Krejci finds Backes. He stuffs it home, and they're off and running.
617-779-0985. We will get to your calls throughout the course of the show today. Obviously, we will talk with Joe Haggerty coming up later this hour, Billy Jaffe coming up in the final half hour of the show today as we take you up until 11 o'clock. As we talk about how how that game progressed and, you know, the early part of the game, like the Bruins, they were able to get a lead on the power play goal. They kind of felt like they had the momentum. As you mentioned, Judd, though, kind of early on in that second period, things shifted and the Maple Leafs started to get the better of the play for a chunk of time. And then, you know, it and that's again kind of indicative of playoff hockey, is you're these kind of ebbs and flows. Like, Toronto is a really good hockey team, and you're most likely not going to be able to dominate them for 60 minutes. They're going to have their chances, and they were able to generate some chances. And as Bob mentioned, maybe, you know, a little bit of puck luck goes their way, and it could be a different story.
I think the Leafs basically admitted they were staggered by the start that the Bruins got off to in that first period, whether it was the environment, the way the top line was going, the way that the Bruins were able to rotate in and get everybody involved. As you look down the score sheet, 10 different guys registered points. There are even more that were involved who didn't even register a point, like Adam McQuaid or Tuukka Rask in particular. But that game, in the first period, started to change maybe, I don't know, with about 8 minutes left in that first period, where the Leafs all of a sudden started to settle in. Maybe they created a few turnovers. Maybe they were able to generate some breakdowns from the Bruins in the neutral zone, and they started to counter, and they started to bring some speed. And that allowed them to get into the game. It was one bad pinch that allowed Zach Hyman, or maybe I shouldn't say
It was
a pinch by Zdeno Chara.
As he's supposed to do.
Yes.
When he has support, and he had support. That was a good pinch. He had support from Krejci. The speed of Hyman surprised Krejci. He didn't quite the angle that he needed to. He was there. He was there, and it was just a great individual effort by Hyman.
Yeah, let me rephrase. It wasn't a bad, you know, that's the way the Bruins play, is to challenge and go down to the hash marks. The puck gets by him. He beats two guys, and he beats Rask on a great move going forehand to backhand as he's rushing up the ice. He gets through Krejci, and he gets through Charlie McAvoy. That was pretty impressive. But that's where the game started to change a little bit. They were able to carry some of that momentum into the second period. The Bruins were able to withstand that, and then they rallied later in the period.
Yeah.
And that goal late by David Pastrnak, I think that also stung them heading into the third period. When you get goals that happen early in games or late in periods, they tend to have more gravity.
Yeah, can we throw this out there, too? What's Mike Babcock at the fourth line doing out with a minute to go in the second period?
I read his quotes.
What were the quotes? I didn't see them.
That's the situation he wanted. He said, those guys get paid to get that puck out, get it into the offensive zone. They didn't do their job. That was his quote.
Yeah, well. I mean, we've seen the Bruins have their fourth line out in that situation before, because Bruce Cassidy has had confidence in them all season long. So maybe that is true. Maybe that is true. But, you know, if people were wondering, okay, coaching decisions, who's got the edge? Well, with a minute to go and the fourth line out for the Toronto Maple Leafs, the Bruins countered with the Bergeron line, and they dominated them. I mean, that's right. I mean, yep. And that goal makes it 3-1 with less than a minute to go in the second period.
Yeah, 38 seconds. Yeah.
So, 38 seconds left.
I mean, you talk about a little bit of a turning point. We had a lot of turning. You always have turning points in games. You always have critical moments. I mean, that's a big, big moment right there. Yeah, they didn't do the job. Toronto didn't, but I don't know if that's the line I have out there because, you know, that's not, you know, I know that they bring in Plekanec for a reason. I get that. All right. So they bring him in and they think he can do the job. So I understand that, you know, Komarov should be able to as well. He's out there on the ice at that time. They've got their top pair out there. But I don't know if that's, I'm not around Toronto every day like we are the Bruins. And if Bruce Cassidy put his fourth line out there in that situation, I have no problem with it because he's done it all year long. So maybe Babcock has, but I love the fact that, you know, Bergeron's been playing against Matthews most of the game, but with a minute to go and a faceoff in the offensive zone and against the fourth line for the Toronto Maple Leafs, get him out there.
Thomas Plekanec has an accomplished NHL career. I don't think there's any question about it, but I was a little surprised, at least going through the numbers of his playoff history, and he's played close to 90 playoff games. I want to say he is a minus 23 overall in the playoffs. Now, every situation is different, so I try not to put too much stock in those numbers. But when I see a number like that compared to the amount of games that he's played, it does at least give you a little bit of reason to have some pause. I think the word coming out of Toronto, at least for a lot of the people who have watched Thomas Plekanec, who was brought in to check some of the top centers of the Boston Bruins, is that he hasn't been a very effective player since coming over to the Leafs.
He wasn't
in the
a very
train.
Effective player before he came over. He was towards the end. I mean, that's been the whole thing with him. He's just, you know, like I said, if Sean Corrali and Noel Achari and Tim Schaller are put out there in the last minute of a second period, I got no problem with it because he's done it all year long and he's had trust in them all year long. Bruce Cassidy's had trust in that line playing against other teams' top lines. And in fact, he wants it sometimes because of, you know, the way that those guys play. So, you know, I would get that. And like I said, in fairness to Mike Babcock and Toronto, I don't know if he's done that all year long. I don't know if he's been comfortable with his fourth line. They didn't like Dominic Moore on the fourth line. That's why they went out and got Thomas Plekanec. But they didn't do the job. I bet if they got a minute to go in the second period tonight that he doesn't have the fourth line out there in a faceoff in his own zone.
Well, and they're going to change the fourth line again because Leo Komarov is going to move from the fourth line to the top line and take the spot alongside Austin Matthews, which I think that they have done in the past.
Far be it from us to you know, question a guy that's got all the accolades that Babcock does. I wouldn't have liked that.
I mean,
if I'm a Toronto fan, I wouldn't have liked that.
I tell you what, I'm interested to get your thoughts too about, because there's was some serious question in my mind why they don't challenge the Bruins' first goal of the game.
I can't believe he explained that.
Well, we'll get to that coming up.
He explained a lot of things.
Yeah, it didn't mean it worked out for him. 617-779-0985. It is the Sports Hub Hockey Show here on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Bruins, the NHL. This is the show that's all hockey.
He scores!
The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerai, and Bob Beers on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
.5 the Sports Hub and the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerai, Bob Beers. 617-779-0985. We're going to get to some of your calls here in just a second. But just before the break, we were talking about Mike Babcock, some of the decisions that he made, the Leafs coach, in game one of this series. And one of them that stands out is the Bruins' first goal, which, if it wasn't offside, it was really close. And Mike Babcock chose not to challenge. I know this is a difficult thing because, you know, if you get it wrong, there's a penalty, and now you're down 1-0, and you're shorthanded on the road, and the game could spiral out of control in a hurry in the first game of the playoffs. But
not only shorthanded, if he gets it, he
gets a penalty for it.
You end up having not you get the goal scored against you, and then you got to kill another penalty.
Yeah. So
He explained it, Judge.
He explained it. Yeah. So
he said that his video replay? Guys, his video guys did not get the replays fast enough. So they needed, I think, to paraphrase what he said, we needed 3 or 4 seconds more to be able to make the decision. And apparently he said, and this is why it's going to be headlines, and you, I guarantee
home
this will
advantage,
be a topic. This will be a topic, I guarantee, around the NHL in the offseason, if not during the playoffs, is Babcock alluded to the fact that this has been a problem for a while, that they don't seem to get the replays as fast as they need to. And because of that, he didn't feel like he had the evidence he needed to challenge. Otherwise, he would have just been throwing a dart at the board.
Yeah, yeah,
I mean, that's, have we heard that from any other coach? If this has been a problem on a regular basis, first I've heard of it.
It's the first I've heard of it. I don't know if it exists. I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, he's claiming that this is systemic. You know, that apparently the video guys don't get the replays fast enough so the coaches can make the calls.
We don't get the blue line replay like we want, and we don't get it till after the fact.
They have access to that, but the broadcast does not.
They should.
Right? Yeah.
They should. If they don't, they should. That was pretty close. I mean, that was it might have been. I mean, I've watched it a couple times, and I mean, it was close.
I mean, it's a, again, if you're not sure, I guess I understand it, because you are put in a tough spot with that additional penalty now.
The referees generally give them enough time.
They give them a while.
They give them a lot of leeway on those to say, look, do you guys want a challenge? All right, I got to look. I mean, give me a second, you know, and they're pretty good about that. They're going to be good about it right now, but I was surprised he didn't challenge. I figured it was coming.
I thought it was going to come too. And
Bruins are saying, line up, let's go.
I didn't have a clock on it, but if you look at when that goal was scored and when they dropped the puck to start play again, I thought that there was ample amount of time.
It wasn't quick. I mean, it wasn't quick.
They had the celebration. They went over to the coaching staff. There was some milling around between Babcock and his assistants on the bench.
We saw a couple replays. You know, watching. You know, we had Nesson on it. I mean, we saw a couple replays of it. We didn't see the blue line replay because they don't get it yet. But we saw a couple replays, and as the fans did. I mean, he had to see something.
And I don't know.
He's right on the blue line.
Right. It happens right in front of their bench. Yeah.
You know, they got to have a pretty good idea.
I was surprised they didn't challenge just based on line of sight. But he said it was because they did not have the video evidence in a timely fashion, so he chose not to go for that.
Happened at Gillette Stadium a couple times. Wasn't there some stuff going on at Gillette like that?
Yeah, you know, Zolak
frequencies
pops up in their headsets and things like that with Mike Tomlin. Yeah, that happens.
Home ice.
Yeah.
It's not the days of like Harry Sinden turning the heat up to like 90 degrees in the visitors' locker room, or you know, configuring the benches so that you know the home bench is a lot higher than the visiting bench, and Bob Johnson going out and measuring it and calling the bowl gang and saying we want our bench the same height as their bench.
Let's go to Maria in Watertown up first here on 98.5 The Sports Hubs Hockey Show.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen, from sunny Florida. How are you today?
Good.
Quickly, I just wanted to commend the Bruins for their efforts the other night. I was a little concerned, having seen the last couple of games going into the season, that they looked a little tired, and they got their skating legs underneath them. But Toronto did come hard at them, so this series is not going to be a shoo-in for this team. And then quickly on the Kadri suspension, you know, I'm a little sick and tired of every time one of these issues comes up that people are point the finger at Brad Marchand as if he's responsible all the time for these types of hits. Kadri is a similar rat as Marchand is. He's been playing on the edge all season long, and I'm glad that Department of Player Safety finally got one right. I would have liked to see maybe, you know, 4 games, 5 games, but I'm glad that he had a message sent to him loud and clear, and let's stop with the, oh, but you guys have Marchand, who's the dirtiest player in the league. Stop it. I'm done with it. I don't want to hear it anymore. Have a good day, gentlemen.
All right, appreciate the call, Maria. And look, the reaction of the fans aside, on both sides. I mean, there was no question. The moment that Kadri hits Wingles, I don't think there was a question in too many people's minds that there had to be discipline coming. And I know that the Bruins fans have had issues with the Department of Player Safety on a number of different occasions this year. Bruins guys getting suspended, opposing players not getting suspended. We have digested all of those throughout the course of the season. This one seemed like a no-brainer. And I was just, yesterday, I was surprised it took as long as it did before they finally announced the decision, but ultimately they got it right. To me, I mean, three games in the postseason is a significant penalty.
Yeah, I think when we were talking about it, Judd, off the air, I said I expected three. Judd was saying maybe one, and we agreed to say, okay, somewhere in the middle
of that. Yeah. I thought two.
Yeah, and
and that's because I didn't have a whole lot of faith.
Yeah, right. You never know. Right?
I knew it was going to get something.
But there was no gray area on this one. You know, some of the other ones you can kind of dissect, like you were talking about, and we've talked about already. You can kind of say, well, you know, this and that, and you give them, you know, little things here and there. Player put himself in that position. He's leaning forward, right? Whatever the case is. This was a no-brainer. It was a no-brainer. It was just a matter of how many games.
Yeah.
And that's a lot. Three is a lot in the playoffs. I mean, that is significant, and it's weighted more heavily than the regular season. So this is a significant suspension. But it was a dumb hit, and I get the emotion part of it. I totally understand that you're running high on emotions. He was running high on emotions all game.
Yeah, this was not the first questionable thing he did that night.
Well, I mean, you know, he threw hits. I mean, but he wasn't. He's a valuable player. He's a good player. And he wasn't involved in that at all. He was just trying to run around. I mean, I didn't get where he was, you know. When we talk about controlled emotions, you want to play on emotional, you want to play intense, but you got to have that controlled intensity. You watch his game right from the drop of the puck, and he wasn't that at all. And someone needed to reel him in early and say, play the game, because you're a good player. We need you. He's a 30-goal scorer. Isn't he, right? He's one of the 30 scorers.
Yeah.
So this guy, he's good, but he was interested in just running around, it seemed like, and he got caught up in the emotions, and he took a penalty on Wingles, you know, a few minutes earlier, and it was questionable. I know that some people in Canada thought it was from the side, but I mean, the way Wingles went into the boards was pretty awkward, and
you're generally going to get that call.
You can make a case that should be a penalty, absolutely, but that hit right there. And okay, did Wingles come in a little high on Marner? Yeah, he did. But that doesn't give him that. And don't listen to anything he says after the game, because he's just on damage control at that point. And you know, I don't think he's overly.
Well, he felt like he was throwing out every excuse that they might use.
He
put himself in a vulnerable position.
What he needs to do now is says, "I let my team down," because he did.
Yeah,
and he's letting him down for games 2, 3, and 4 because that hit is no. There was no question it was going to be suspendable. It's just a matter of how many, and anything that he says after the game, just don't even listen to it, because he's just on the damage control. And if he really believes that, then he's delusional. He is.
Well, we will talk.
I don't think he does. I mean, you hear guys talk after the game, you know, this and that, and they say little things, but once it comes down, you know, the reality sets in.
Well, we'll talk going forward about how much that loss means to the Maple Leafs. As Bob said, he's a good player. This is a back-to-back 30-goal scorer that's been erased from their lineup for a good chunk of the series now, and the impact that will have on the Leafs going forward. We'll touch on that coming up. Joe Haggerty of NBC Sports Boston is going to join us coming up next, and more of your calls coming up as well. 617-779-0985 on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Sports Hub Headlines.
The Red Sox are now 11-2. That's after they beat the Orioles 7-3 last night at Fenway. Eduardo Nunez hit a three-run homer. Eduardo Rodriguez picking up the win. 6 innings, 1 run, 8 strikeouts. Game 2 of the series set for this afternoon. 1:05, Hector Velasquez against Baltimore righty Alex Cobb. The Bruins will host the Maple Leafs in Game 2 of their series tonight. Riley Nash is doubtful with concussion-like symptoms. The league has also suspended Leafs center Nazem Kadri 3 games for his hit on Tommy Wingles in Game 1. Wingles is questionable for tonight, so that could open up a spot for Ryan Donato.
I don't think I would be where I am today if I wasn't upset that I wasn't in, but at the end of the day, it's their decision. I'm going to be ready to play no matter when they need me.
Judd and Bob will have the latest at 7:30 here on the Sports Hub. Winnipeg beats Minnesota 4-1 to take a 2-0 series lead. Vegas takes a 2-0 series lead with a 2-1 win over the Kings, and the Flyers evened up their series with the Penguins with a 5-1 win. Celtics will kick off their playoff series with the Bucks tomorrow. Revolution host FC Dallas tonight at 7:30. You can listen to that game on 98.5 HD2. And in golf, two rounds in the books at the RBC Heritage. Bryson DeChambeau, your leader at 10-under. Sports of Bedlines are brought to you by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. Visit now for a 15-minute oil change. You can stay in your car and no appointment is ever needed. I'm Matt McCarthy on Boston's Home for Sports, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Your next update in 30 minutes.
Get in on the discussion. 617-779-0985. The Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Far corner now, Marchand. Fired by Pastrnak. Didn't get a lot on it. Stick save Anderson. Marchand around a check. Pastrnak rips one. He scores! Brad Marchand. Puck retrieval right circle. Escape the check. Hit Pastrnak. Tape the tape. And he wires it inside the near post. 3-1 Bruins.
It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers.
Want to mention once again, and we'll continue to plug it throughout the course of the show today, but Billy Jaffe and I have started a podcast for during the week, the Extra Ice Time podcast. Sign up, subscribe, do all that fun stuff, 98.5thesportshub.com. In the podcast section, there is now a dedicated section just for the hockey show. And it'll be in there. You can sign up through your other podcast subscriptions and all that. It's very fun.
When are you going to get Beersy to join the podcast world? That's what I want to know. You ready to jump in there, Beersy? You podcast your butt off?
Nope. But we'll have.
I don't think it's in the future, Chuck.
No,
we'll have another one coming up. It sounds
I would
like
do it fast.
Yeah. Or especially
kind of let it fly a little bit.
A few extra bucks thrown in there too. Why not? Right.
He's not in it for the money.
Not in the
He's
playoffs.
In it for the love
no,
of the game.
This is the time to be talking about the game. There's so much to talk about from game one. There's so
totally.
Many things to break down and dissect. There's so many little areas that you know, I enjoyed. You know, just going back and watching the game again yesterday, you kind of, you know, you miss a couple of things. You pick up on some new things. And then the adjustments made for game two. I mean, love the playoffs. It's just, you know, you love it as a player. You look forward to it. That's what you play for. And it's just a whole nother. It's a completely another higher attitude and you know, as a player, as a coach, as fans. I mean, who doesn't love it? So it's, I mean, this is the best time to be talking about it.
And even beyond game two, you kind of wonder how the series may change. Just once it gets to Toronto, Babcock has last change of things.
Oh,
are any different than
that's
they are
gonna
now?
Be, that's going to be huge. I mean, that was big from the start, and we've seen that in Toronto. You know, he's had the ability to have that last change, and you know, he's used it to his advantage on a couple of occasions. But you know, that happens all the time in visiting cities, right? And I think not to get too far ahead because we got game two today. But if you bring it up, I mean, the Bruins have a lot of confidence in their lines, and especially if you get Riley Nash back in there for game three. They've got a lot of confidence in the depth of their lines, and there's not too many lines that they feel that they're overmatched on. They might be evenly matched, but there's not too many lines that they feel overmatched on. So, but that will be fascinating to kind of watch the matchups as you move forward.
And a lot of the things that we're talking about, I feel like, are kind of byproducts of that. You know, Toronto, there's a vulnerability there defensively that you can go after and exploit. And the Bruins did that in game one very effectively. And I think that's going to be there for them in lots of parts of the series, especially with that top line. I don't know that this is going to be one of those series where the top lines cancel each other out. I think there's damage that can be done by that Bruins top line pretty consistently in the series.
Let's take that one step further, because I think one of the things that has not been talked about surprisingly here heading into game two was Freddie Anderson's play. This was the guy who the Leafs believe was their MVP during the regular season. He had a lot of rocky moments during the course of that game. If you go back to the third period, all right, so yes, the Bruins are up at that point 3-1, but what happens? Freddie fumbles the puck out in front of his own
net.
On a dump-in, fires it in front of his own bench. His team is changing. They're caught in a difficult position. He helps generate a too-many-men penalty. Now all of a sudden the Bruins, now granted, it took a while for their power play to score, and it took the major Nazem Kadri to get it going. but it started to sway the momentum. If you want, if you want as the Leafs to try and turn the tables right there, that's not the way to do it. In the first 2 minutes, to take a minor penalty. Took another penalty shortly thereafter from Kadri when he boarded Wingles.
Yep.
Yeah, any chance they had to get back back in the game, it's 3-1 and they're taking two penalties.
But Freddie Anderson gave up juicy rebounds all night long. And there are a lot of people, I think, in having some conversations with some goaltending coaches around the National Hockey League that feel like whether it's the amount of games that he played during the course of the year, he made 66 starts, that was second in the National Hockey League, or how tuned in he is to his craft, he is not quite the same goaltender he was maybe earlier in the season.
Let's talk a little bit about personnel, because there was some decisions to be made. I mean, as Bob mentioned, you know, when Riley Nash comes back into the lineup, I mean, this team gets potentially even deeper, and they can get a little, you know, back to what they have done for much of the season when he gets back into the lineup. But the decision prior to game one to sit Ryan Donato, I know, didn't sit well with a lot of people. Well, I mean, your team generates five goals without him, and you know, and offensively, certainly, you aren't missing anything. So, you know, now with the hit on Wingles the other night, what's personnel look like for game two? How do they adjust, as the Leafs will adjust as well?
Well, if Wingles doesn't play, I would expect it to look like it looked like in practice yesterday, which was Donato moves into that third line left wing, potentially, and then Danton Heinen goes down to the fourth line and plays with Corrali and Schaller. And that's a pretty good spot for Heinen to be in. I think, you know, he's been hard enough on the puck at times that I think while giving them a little bit of an offensive element, he'll be able to survive there. He's a good two-way player, a better fit, you know, to potentially get put on that fourth line than Ryan Donato would be. And you get, you know, the offense for Ryan Donato on that third line with David Backes. And I think that's a real interesting look if they go that way.
It's important, though, and you say third and fourth line, that it may look like that on a sheet, you know, but he doesn't use them as a fourth line.
Right, but I mean more bottom six, you know what I mean?
No,
he's going to be looking for them for defensive.
I completely get what you mean, but yeah, he'll use those lines. He has so much confidence in both of those lines.
Yeah.
And if he's putting Corrali out there, it's not, oh, we got a fourth line out there. And we get
especially in the playoffs,
that.
Beersy, right? Corrali turns into a scoring machine in the playoffs.
I mean,
three goals
in
five games.
Season, Joe. It's not just the scoring part of it. It's the way that he plays. And anybody that had him out of the lineup when the playoffs started was foolish, because this guy's a valuable part of this team and what he's able to bring in the middle. He's fast and he's relentless. So when people were making their mock lineups and they didn't have Sean Corrali in there, if somebody did, I don't know. But, I mean, this guy's got to be in the lineup. He's an important part of it. And when you bring Nash back in, Riley Nash, when you're missing Riley Nash and Sean Corrali as those bottom six centers, it changed the whole team. And when you're talking about, okay, why aren't the Bruins winning? Why are they scuffling? Well, you're missing a couple of really key ingredients. And it may not seem like a lot, but strength down the middle, Bergeron, Krejci, Nash, Corrali. That makes them really strong down the middle. You take away Nash and Corrali, all of a sudden you're scrambling and you're moving parts around, and you're not as strong in that area.
And it's faceoffs. It's, you know, Nash brings more offensive upside in addition to the defensive side of the game than Achari might as the third line guy. His chemistry with Heinen and Backes during the year when they were able to support offensively and play good two-way hockey. I mean, Riley Nash has been an extremely underrated, very valuable part of this team. There's no question about it.
Well, it goes to what Bob was talking about earlier, too, when we were talking about, you know, Mike Babcock having his fourth line out in the last minute of a period and they give up a goal. You know, he said, but, you know, if Bruce Cassidy did that, you wouldn't question it, because that fourth line has been reliable in that situation, and he's willing to do that on a regular basis.
If you know what, though, if Toronto traded for Thomas Pekanec to come in and check David Krejci and Patrice Bergeron, and that was kind of the reason that they got him, and I kind of figured, especially the Krejci matchup, that's one that he doesn't like.
I thought
like
he'd go against Krejci.
Yeah, totally. But if you brought him in, you traded for him, I think you got to at least put him in that, you know, position to start the playoffs and see how it goes.
If it happens tonight, does he have him out there?
No, I don't think so. You know, but I think to start, they probably had felt like they had to do that because they made an investment in him and that was kind of his role. But yeah, no, after that, what happened at the end of the second period? No.
Joe Haggerty, NBC Sports Boston, is joining us in studio. We will continue with him and more of your calls on the way at 617-779-0985 here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerai, Bob Beers, the home of the Bees, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers, and Joe Haggerty, NBC Sports Boston, joining us for this segment as well.
By the way, Ryan, I'd like everybody out there to know I'm sitting in Fred Tutcher's seat, so he has something to be grouchy about on Monday morning. So
you got Fred Tutcher wound up enough yesterday.
Hey, it was fun.
We're talking a little bit about personnel and some of the decisions that the Bruins had to make and will continue to have to make as this series goes on. But the Kadri suspension, as we mentioned just before the break, weighs a lot now on Mike Babcock. And you know, you take a back-to-back 30-goal scorer out of the lineup, and their depth down the middle suddenly gets tested in a big way. And, you know, if not in Game 2, when they get home, you know, I was mentioning this earlier on, you know, so much is put on in the playoffs of being able to get those matchups you want when you're on home ice. And now you take, you know, a guy, you know, one of your top offensive players out of there who's a matchup, you know, that's a potential matchup that Mike Babcock might be able to work when they get home that is now lost in games 3 and 4.
Well, it's not even just the offense, which is significant with Kadri. He's one of their better two-way players, too. You know, he's a factor in all zones when he's playing, right? He's a very good player and one of their best power play guys, 12 power play goals this year. So you start subtracting all of these different things that not, and he's one of the guys that plays kind of with attitude on that team, as we saw in the third period. It was stupid attitude, but it was attitude nonetheless.
Yeah, him and Komarov are the guys that play with attitude, if you want to. Those are really the, I don't know how many other guys you'd put in that category. Polak a little bit on defense, but those
it's kind of tough
guys
to have attitude, though, when a guy's kissing you on the cheek and, licking your neck. You know,
whatever.
That's the kind of saps some of the attitude.
There will be
a
rule against that here in the near future.
I bet you there will be.
I can almost guarantee it.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I can see that happening, too.
Unsportsmanlike conduct.
Yeah.
If you kiss a guy.
Love to be a flat. Love to be a fly
how
on the
would
wall.
You, how are they going
to
word that in the rule book?
For Coley Campbell when he's having to go through this in his head.
I know.
Hey, when you're looking for ways to get under people's skin and you want to toe the line and you don't want to go over it, that's perfectly within the rules right now.
Yep. He's toeing the line right now. Not getting in trouble, not taking penalties, getting in the other team's head. That's exactly what he wants to do.
But you were talking about the changes that Mike Babcock's going to make. So he has a number of different choices that he could go with. When Austin Matthews was out during the regular season, William Nylander moved to the middle.
Mm-hmm.
For this choice in particular, he's going to put Marlowe in the middle. And I don't know if you saw his comments from yesterday, but he said, long-term, I don't like him at center. Short-term, that's okay. So where does he employ that line? How does he use that line? And what can the Bruins possibly exploit? Because Marlowe, even though he can play center, is better on the wing.
Well, not only that, but I think you mentioned Judd earlier. Like they're going to bump Komarov from the fourth line to the first line.
Yeah, but he's, I mean,
he's done that in the past.
Yeah. That's not a massive jump. Like you get caught up in the fourth first line stuff. I mean, he can play. He's a pretty good player. He was an All-Star a couple years ago.
Yeah.
In fact, he was in an All-Star with Brad Marchand a couple years ago.
That might have also been because you had
maybe
to have one representative.
Yeah.
But I think that might have been the year that you had to have one representative from each team.
No,
when
but
the
he had a good year.
Tanking.
He had a good season.
He
that
had
year.
A good year.
They were in a playoff.
But yeah, offensively, he can
season.
Hold his own in a top line kind of position.
I mean, he's not a scorer or anything. Right. But if they're gonna, if you know, I think Babcock's saying if Bergeron's line going to play against Matthews' line, then you know maybe we'll move Komarov up there and see if we can negate some of that. But whether it works or not, whether he even sticks, who knows? But it could all change tonight.
He likes those hard-edged players, though. If you think back to Mike and when he used to coach in Detroit, how much he loved a guy like Justin Abdelkader.
Yeah.
Yep. Always loved a guy like that, you know, to be able to create space and get to the middle of the ice.
He didn't have a lot of those guys. He only had one or two in Detroit.
Well, so. Abdelkader was really the only guy there.
He doesn't have that many in Toronto.
Exactly. That's my point.
Yes.
So it's easy to figure that out, and all right, we're going to go that direction. But I don't know if he even sticks with that. He might, you know, see how effective it is and see what plays out tonight.
But whatever the matchup, though, the Leafs become less dangerous. They become a little bit slower. Certainly they're going to be doing things they don't want to do, removing a guy like Kadri out there. And the power play is one of their big things, even though I thought the Bruins' penalty kill is better than Toronto's, and I thought the special teams, they would have an advantage because of that. But they rely a lot on their power play. You take a guy like Kadri out, that removes a big piece. You're talking about weakening Toronto on multiple fronts and making them a little easier to play against while he's gone for three games. This is a huge swing for the Bruins.
By the way, before I forget, Toronto had some good chances on the power play. We all admit that. There were some pucks that, you know, could have gone either way. I think Mariners, you know, under the arm there of Rask that went back through the crease. I know Bozak had a chance where McQuaid made a good play. But Austin Matthews, so they line up and on the forehand side. Marner on the right side, he's a right shot, and Matthews is a left shot over on the left side. You know, some teams will switch that so that you've got the opposite. But Matthews so good at getting the shot away. Adam McQuaid, four block shots in the game. Matthews, I looked at his line, he had four shots blocked. I think McQuaid had all of them. If I'm not mistaken, he had at least three of them. And, you know, he was in the face there of Matthews over on that side. And that's... You talk about all the things that they did well against Austin Matthews, trying to take him away, trying to take away time and space, especially in five-on-five situations. McQuaid was big over there on that penalty kill.
And I think that second penalty kill they had, it was McQuaid and Chara out there for the entire time, if I'm not mistaken. They were out there pretty much
the entire time. Well, that was second period, right? So they're stuck in that zone if they don't get the puck all the way down. And, you know, they were only using basically three anyhow, so Kevin Miller would come out and one guy would go off, probably McQuaid. And then when Chara was in the box... I mean, McQuaid, Miller, the majority of that. So that's, I mean, the penalty kill, and different forwards we know, but penalty kill was huge, but Toronto's power play is dangerous. It's good.
Well, when they got those power play opportunities, it felt like, I mean, it was like, this is nail-biting time. You can tell, you know, how good, even though they didn't score the other night, you can tell how good that power play is. Mm-hmm. And the feeling in that building... It becomes like, oh boy, you know, this feels like it's about to go south here for the Bruins. And they managed it, you know, again, a little bit of luck, a little bit of, you know, some block shots, a little bit of skill, you know, they managed to weather the storm.
And some saves.
But that's absolutely some saves. But that's something that they, you know, they have to be aware of. They got to stay out of the box against this team because you give them opportunities, they're going to capitalize on some of those.
They do, but I think it's even more imperative for Toronto to stay out of the box because the Bruins have just as good a power play right in the same range as Toronto, and the Leafs' penalty kill is not nearly as good as Boston's is. So I think that's an area, and they had three power play goals in game one. That's an area they're going to be able to make hay through the entire series. And I think that they're going to have an advantage over a lot. It's funny to say this, given what we lived through in 2011 with the 0-for power play through the entire run there. But they're going to have better power plays than just almost everybody that they play in the postseason.
But I do think it's good to get that man advantage on the board early on, especially the way that the Bruins did it in Game 1, because it serves notice. If you're going to go to the box, this is what's going to happen.
All right. Just predict for us going forward. Like, how do you look at... the next few games, especially with Kadri out of the lineup, how do you look at this playing out here? What do you expect? The Leafs obviously will come back strong tonight. So what do you expect over the next few games in this series?
Yeah, obviously they're going to come out you know, with all guns blazing tonight and try to take game two and go back, you know, with technically the home ice advantage if they take a game here. But... without Kadri, given what I saw out of the Bruins in Game 1 and how things played out in that game, obviously it was closer than 5-1, but there were still things you saw on the ice that they can clearly continue to exploit, and they're going to be able to go after. I think removing Kadri from the series goes from, I thought it was Bruins in 7, I think it's going to be a shorter series now because of that. I do.
Interesting. All right, we appreciate you stopping in. We'll talk to you next week.
You got it, boys.
Joe Haggerty, NBC Sports Boston. We have another hour to go here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show, and your call's coming up next at 617-779-0985 after Matt McCarthy gives us our Sports Hub headlines.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerai, and Bob Beers. The home of the Bees. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show, hour number two. Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerai, Bob Beers. Billy Jaffe will be along in about a half hour from now. Get his thoughts on this series and some of the other series going on around the league, as I think we made reference to earlier. Philly-Pittsburgh series took a nice swing back in the other direction after a 7-0 win for Pittsburgh in game one. 5-1 Philly comes back and wins game two. So they've got themselves a series there, no question about that. And I think a lot of us believe that we've got ourselves a series here, and the Bruins will have a lot on their plate tonight. In game two, of course, you can hear it right here on 98.5 The Sports Hub with these two guys on the call. I want to circle back to something that you mentioned, Bob, about Austin Matthews and trying to neutralize a guy like that. And I feel like we have seen that a number of times this year. The Bruins have managed to, and I point in particular to maybe a couple of games against Tampa Bay where a guy like Stamkos wasn't really able to accomplish much offensively. And Austin Matthews, kind of in a similar vein in game one, you know, seemed invisible at times during the course of that game. What did the Bruins do in game one to focus on him, and how do they continue to keep him from doing damage as this series goes on?
It has to be a pack mentality, first of all. It can't be just one guy, and it's not. I mean, he got isolated once down low with Brad Marchand. Marchand's a good player one-on-one, even defensively, you know, pretty sound in those areas. And Matthews got isolated with him. He's a very strong player. He's big. He's strong. Mm-hmm. He can protect the puck extremely well. And he made a pretty good move on Marchand down below the goal line to generate a shot. It was from a sharp angle, but he generated a scoring chance because of it. So it has to be that pack mentality where, you know, if he has the puck, you're making sure that you take away. It's always take away time and space. So, you know, the gap has to be tight, especially in the neutral zone between the forwards and D. There was an instance early in the game, first period. I don't know if you remember it or not. And Backes was back covering on defense. And it was a 3-on-2. And I want to say Nylander had the puck on the right wing side, right in front of the Bruins bench. And Backes was a left defenseman. And Backes stepped up because Hyman was busting through. And Matthews is on the left wing side. It was a great play by Backes to recognize, okay, I got to shut this down before it gets to the blue line. You know, he's not a defenseman either, but he made a really good play, and it sent it off sides. That was one of the few times that they had open ice with that line coming down the ice to try to get open as a line. And it was Hyman busting through, and the pass was, you can just see it developing. It was going to go over to Matthews, and if he's getting a shot from the top of the circle, an open look from the top of the circle, my money's on him. I mean, that he's lethal with that shot. Yeah. It jumps off his stick. He's so accurate with it. There's a reason he scored 40, you know, last year, and he would have had it, at least that this year if he didn't, you know, miss some games because of injury. I mean, he is a dynamic player in those areas. He's so good at getting the shot off. His shot is accurate. It's good. He's strong. You've got to take – it's a pack mentality with it. And I commended McQuaid. I think he had 4 block shots all on Matthews on the power plays. You know, from that left wing circle. And we were looking at the ice times for McQuaid on the penalty kill. You'd said, Judd, that Toronto had 6 minutes on the power play in the game. One in the first period. They had 2 power plays in the second period. McQuaid had 5 minutes and what was
11
it?
11 seconds.
Yes. 5-11 yeah. Killing penalties. And he's on that side with Matthews. Now, he's not the only weapon, but we're talking about him right now. So it has to be a pack mentality, taking away the time and space. And whether it's Bergeron's line or it's somebody else's line, you know, you've got to be aware of that. So the defense can step up and take that time and space away if you've got support from the defenseman or from the forwards coming back. You know, there was a lot of times where, you know, a guy would step up on the blue line, a defenseman for the Bruins would step up on the blue line to try to take the rush away. And if there was a soft chip into the zone, the forward was there to pick it up and they were coming back out. And that's got to be, I mean, that is paramount. And then when they're playing good team defense, that's when they were at their best this season. And 5-on-5 scoring chances for Toronto in that game, there weren't a lot.
No. When they were on the power play, it felt dangerous. But other than that,
they had some shots. They had shots 5-on-5, but there weren't a lot of, I mean, Gardner hit the post, you know, from the point. I mean, I don't have a sheet in front of me that charts that stuff, but I don't remember a lot of 5-on-5 scoring chances.
Just in the three zones, I think one of the things that the Bruins want to focus on as the series progresses, and they also did it in game one, make those top-end guys for Toronto, make them defend. That's going to
first shift for Bergeron's line. That was against the Matthews line, and Toronto never touched the puck.
Right? Make those guys defend. I think one of the things that the Leafs are trying to focus on, how do they get through the neutral zone? That was not easy for them when it was 5-on-5 in game one. And then the other thing that the Bruins want to focus on, because Toronto has a lot of speed, how do you exit? And even Noel Achari, when we had him on in the first intermission, he said it was not bad. There were some things that we needed to clean up. But for the most part, that's when the game started to change a little bit. Toronto was able to generate a few turnovers. The Bruins had some issues getting out at certain points later in the first period. But for the most part, it was pretty clean. The Bruins did a pretty good job of that. And then the other thing for the Leafs is because Matthews doesn't kill penalties, the more they're in the box, the less he's on the ice.
Yeah, and that obviously was in the third period, a lot of that, and it came in the third period. He didn't see a lot of ice time there because the Bruins were on the power play the whole time. But the there's a couple areas. Like Toronto can get in there quickly on the forecheck because of their speed and their quickness. They can get in there. Sometimes when you get caught up in trying to match lines or you try to get certain lines out there against other ones, if you dump the puck in, you're going for a line change. Or if you're in your zone for a longer period of time, once you get out of the zone and you get over the red line and you're dumping it in, you're going for a change.
Sure.
So you can't establish that forecheck. So that's why the zone time for the Bruins is very important in those situations. I look for them to try to forecheck a little differently and a little harder here today when they've got the opportunity. Boston did a good job at getting out. They did go back, retrieve. You know, if you can stand them up at the blue line and you've got support from the forward coming back, now it's a forward and the weak side defenseman going back for a puck and making sure that they're in unison and getting out of the zone, whether Rask is setting the puck up or not, depending on how they dump it in, you know, whether it's a soft dump or whether it's a wraparound, you know, those types of areas, you know, are going to be important for Boston coming out. One other adjustment I think the Bruins need to make is and we talked about it during the broadcast, was faceoffs, because when you win a faceoff in their D zone, they've been really effective at using reverses with the defenseman or even with a forward to get the puck out of the zone. Toronto had that mapped out pretty good, pretty well in the first game. They were on that. They weren't allowing those reverses. So there were a couple times where the Bruins got the net and, you know, wrapped the puck around and went down for icing. We saw a lot of that last year against Ottawa. You know, icing after icing after icing after icing, especially after winning faceoffs. So, they tried to clean that up. They've made some adjustments this year, and they've been really good at it. But scouting reports are there, and now it's all about adjustments that you make in order to, you know, be successful in those areas.
Let's go to Dan up in New Hampshire. Dan, you're up on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
What I'm calling, I really would like to see Donato get at least a few shifts on that second line tonight. You know that Nash is going to get his shots on net. Donato, that seems to be his game. With those hands in front of the net, with Anderson giving up those rebounds that he's been given, just like to see it happen.
All right, appreciate the call, Dan. Let's before we get to Donato, Rick Nash, in his return to the lineup, what's he bring to the table? You know, what do you expect out of him in the postseason?
That line was excellent.
Yeah.
That line was excellent. You know, and DeBrusk on the left wing, that line was excellent. And so I don't see that changing right now. Maybe Donato in the future gets a shot there. Maybe they, you know, it makes a couple of changes depending on what's going on. That's a possibility. I mean, you've got a guy with high skill level and Ryan Donato just waiting and itching to get in, and it looks like he might here tonight. So, but that line was very good. You know, we interviewed Nash after the second period, and he said, you know, we asked him, all right, you know, how's your line been? I mean, what have you thought about? He said, they drew two penalties in the game. Nash drew a penalty in the first. DeBrusk drew a penalty in the second. They scored on both of them. Mm. The Bruins did. And he said, we feel like every time we've been on the ice, there could have been a penalty called against Toronto.
Well, I was going to say, there could have been at least one more because he got
kneed by Kadri big time.
Should have been a penalty there.
That was the penalty on Marleau hooking DeBrusk. But Kadri, he stuck out his knee on, and that was concerning because Nash was vulnerable there with the leg exposed,
sure.
and Kadri stuck out the leg on him. But you ask about Nash, extremely effective. He didn't show up on the score sheet, and that's, you know, something you still want to see. But, I mean, that's kind of nitpicking because he was really good in that game. What he was able to create, he was physical. He was in on the forecheck. He used his reach and he used his speed. And even when I think it was Morgan Riley that came across on him when he was trying to cut to the front of the net coming down the right wing side. So Riley, real good mobile defenseman, was able to get back on, pull up, look late, find a guy, good shot on goal. I mean, he made a lot of plays. He made a lot of things happen. And Krejci looked energized, which is good news for the Bruins. That whole line was really strong in that game. And you want to know, you know, you say, okay, Bergeron's line, we need more from them. It makes it easier on the Bergeron line when you've got other threats.
Sure.
And they certainly had other threats in that one.
On any other team, that's a number one line. On any other team, that is a number one line. And to me, if they play like that, mm-hmm. That is a mismatch, even with Kadri in the lineup. And if that line's going the way that they are, how do you check them? How do you choose who you're going to put Kadri, even if he's in the lineup, against? Fine, you want to put him up against Bergeron? Who are you checking David Krejci, Rick Nash, and Jake DeBrusque with? If those guys play like that with their size, their reach, their ability to play along the wall, for David Krejci to be able to slow the game down and make plays, that is an enormous weapon for the Bruins.
All right, let's take Jay in Boston's got a thought on Nash as well. What's up, Jay?
Gentlemen, good morning. Rick Nash, one of my favorite player. I have to ask, he's been in the league a long time. He's a great player, obviously. Does he have a ring? That's what I like to know. Does his name on the cup? You guys know that, whether or not
he does not.
He does not, so he has that incentive.
Went to the finals with the Rangers a couple years ago.
I mean, he's got a ton of incentive. I mean, not only obviously to win the cup, but he's also without contract for next year. So, you know, that when they, if you go back to the trade deadline, when he's available, and that's part of the reason he's available, you look at that and say, I mean, this guy's got all the incentive in the world to come in here and,
if he,
you know,
if
and
he
have
plays
a great
like
run. You have a great run in the playoffs. I mean, that's going to draw a lot of interest over the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's his own motivation. But sure, if he plays like he did, whatever the motivation is, if he plays like he did in Game 1, the Bruins have done well. And the score sheet will show up eventually. But he created so much for them in that game. And that's what you're looking for. He was energized. He was into it. That makes that line so much better.
617-779-0985. We can take more of your calls coming up. Sports Hub Hockey Show continues.
This is the Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerai, and Bob Beers on the home of the Bees, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
is the phone number for the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Judd Zerat has bid us adieu. He is headed over to morning skate right now. Bob Beers is still with me, and we'll be joined by Billy Jaffe from Nesson coming up in about 15 minutes.
Yeah, Judd's got the big interview with Bruce today. We do that interview before in our pregame show for every game. So curious to see what Bruce can. He's been how good is he with? Maybe he says too much sometimes from a, if you're Bruins management, but he's
you know,
been
what?
Refreshingly, you know,
he's amazingly honest,
transparent.
You know, we see, you know, coaches around the league, and different coaches handle the media different ways. Bruce Cassidy is straightforward, honest. He tells you what he thinks, and if he feels like a guy, you know, doesn't kill a guy, but if he feels like
it's
a guy's not playing up for it, he's going to tell you. And I'm sure he's the same way in the room.
Well, he probably takes it to another level in the room. But he's very matter-of-fact with, you know, the media, or very matter-of-fact when he's talking about his team. And he's very, you know, pretty honest with it, his assessments as well. But and in doing so, like the criticisms, when there are criticisms, I mean, you know, people watch. You're not going to, you know, there's no sense in, you can shape it any way you want, but he's pretty matter-of-fact about, you know, what he's seeing and what he likes and what he doesn't like. And when he's asked a question, he answers it well.
I would assume players don't have an issue with that, right? I mean, most guys, I would imagine, are looking for a coach to be honest with them,
exactly,
but not necessarily taking that outside the room.
I think most players would tell you, I might not like what I hear from a coach, but as long as if I'm hearing it and I know where I stand, then it's up to me to, you know, figure it out. I might not agree or I might not like it, but at least I know where I stand with the coach. And it's always a place. The coach never talked to me. The coach, I have no idea why, you know, why I'm out, why I'm doing this, why I'm out. And I don't think that that's the case at all with this entire staff. You know, I think that, you know, if a guy's not in the lineup, he knows why. And, you know, they're pretty forthright with it. And, you know, it from the media, like for a player, when a coach talks about it in the media and there's some criticisms, sometimes that can turn players the wrong way. But he seemed to have, I just think that he's got such good leadership this year, and you know, he's got these younger guys that are buying into what the leaders and what the coaching staff is preaching, that it's been a really tight locker room. And you know, credit, you know, Don Sweeney, credit the staff for being able to mold it that way. But it's you know, that could change in a hurry, right?
Sure.
But you know how they handle some adversity. But they've handled adversity this year, and it's been a good feeling in that locker room all season.
Well, I think there were some questions from some over the course of the especially the last, you know, 2 or 3 years of the Claude Julien regime. There were some questions about the leadership in the room from the players, and a lot of those guys who would be considered leaders on this team are still here. And we look at it now and say, you know, what they have done, in addition to what Bruce Cassidy has done in helping to bring along these young guys, and everybody has bought in, it feels like like things have changed dramatically in there, and it's not just a change at the top in the coaching ranks, I would think. I would think there's got to be some guys that are doing a little bit more about stepping up and taking those reins.
It was a challenge put to the veteran players to accept and pull along the younger guys, if that makes sense.
Sure.
You know, and they're all good players in their own right, but to be a good NHL player on an everyday basis is something entirely different. And the ability to not only accept them, but to pull them along, and it makes it easier when those younger players buy in. And that's one area that maybe is underrated a bit with the way that the Bruins have tried to draft and develop the character part of it. You know, not guys on their own program, but guys that are going to buy in, and guys that are going to, you know, team, you know, all team kind of attitude, not on their own program. I mean, I think that that's the biggest or the best way to put it. And they've got that. They've got that element with the younger players right now. They're all, you know, in it, you know, for the common goal. And credit the older guys for pulling them along and making them feel accepted and wanted. But at the same time, those younger guys have to make sure that they're doing the things that you're supposed to do that a first-year guy does. And,
sure.
And all of it, I shouldn't say all of it, you're always going to hit bumps in the road. But it's been pretty good. It's been pretty fun to watch this season and watch those guys develop and get better and better.
Let's go to Mark. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning. What's up?
Okay, so if the Bruins win tonight, they're up 2-0, right? With Kadri being out, being there, their top power play goal scorer, he's got, what, 12 power play goals in the regular season?
I think
so. Something like that?
Yeah, something in that neighborhood, yep.
I picked the Bruins in 6, but is it out of the realm of possibility? Is it the possibility to put the Leafs away in 5? Just your thoughts, guys.
I appreciate the call, Mark.
There are two givens in the playoffs, I think, right now. Nashville and Winnipeg. Everything else can go either way. That's the way I'm seeing it. And I just because you're missing Kadri, yeah, it weakens them, but it doesn't give the Bruins, you know, the series. It's going to be. I still think it's going to be a grind. I mean, it is. This is a good team that you're playing against, and the second that you lack respect for that, you know, you're going to end up like Pittsburgh did. Not having Kadri in's big. Don't get me wrong, but it doesn't guarantee anything. So maybe it does end at 5. But it's going to be close 5. You know, I remember playing a series, not to go back to when I played, but, you know, we're playing in a playoff series, and we swept the team 4 straight. 3 of the games were overtime. Either way, the things can go either
right.
way. And that's you know, the little breaks here and there, you know, goaltending, you know, one mistake here and there, lack of discipline. So many things you can point at that can change the complexion of a game, that can change the complexion of a series, and it's up to the Bruins now. They've got game one. Now it's up to them to, you know, put a strong hold after, you know, and having that home ice and putting it to your advantage with the line matchups that they have tonight.
Well, there's a reason why. I mean, the NHL playoffs are, you know, as far as all sports goes, the most unpredictable of the bunch. I mean, they because from game to game, things can
Nashville
change wildly.
Finished 8th last year.
Right. Well, not only that, but somebody gets hurt tonight can totally, you know, as much as Kadri gets suspended for the next 3 games changes, you know, potentially the outcome of the series. What happens if somebody gets hurt tonight? You know, somebody significant. You knock on wood, obviously, but it happens. It's part of the playoffs, and it's part of what makes it so difficult to win a Stanley Cup is that you're going to deal with things like that along the way that you don't see coming. And so you look at, I mean, we talked about game one. And it's like that in a lot of games, as you said, Bob. But, you know, puck goes in here. Puck takes a different bounce here. It's a totally different game. It's not a 5-1 game.
It was a 1-1 game until late in the second period. Right?
Yep.
So, you know.
That's a game that could go either way. At that point, you know, before Toronto goes off the rails, that could go, that could absolutely swing either way. And there's no reason to think that tonight's game would be any different than that, right? That it's going to be throughout.
I expect, going into this series,
I anticipate this is going to be a, you know, 6-7 game series. There's no reason to think otherwise.
I haven't changed that thinking yet. Yeah.
All right. We're going to get Billy Jaffe to come in here. Billy Jaffe, of course, part of the Nesson broadcast. We will get his thoughts on this series. We'll get his thoughts on some of the other series going on around the league as well. Matt McCarthy is going to give us his Sports Hub headlines before we do that. And we continue here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. The Sports Hub. Final half hour of this week's edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Bob Beers, now being joined in studio by Nesson's Billy Jaffe, which gives us an opportunity to plug the Extra Ice Time podcast, which kicked off this past week. During the course of the weekdays, Billy and I will be throwing the podcast up there for you to get a little bit of extra hockey show during the course of the week. And it looks like we'll have one for you on Tuesday morning.
Tuesday morning, yeah.
And that'll be right after Game 3. So
yeah,
we'll have lots
to tune into that.
I'm sure you've got all the podcast apps on your phone and ready to go.
A little extra hockey talk, right? Figure it out. Never enough.
Never enough this time of year.
Never enough this time of year. So,
just download the Sports Hub app in the podcast section.
Wowed?
What's your definition of wowed? It depends on that, I think.
Are you going to teach me something I don't know?
I sure hope so. Good. I don't think I can. Right. I don't know about you, though.
I'm sure you can. You know?
We're going to entertain and inform. Perfect. And we're going to have, and we took a little deeper dive last week into, you know, a few of the matchups, potential and stuff maybe that I think we don't regularly get on.
Can you get away with
that gets
a little,
glossed over
little
during
language
the week
as well? Can you get away with some of that stuff a little bit more?
We haven't. We didn't test that out in episode one.
Did we not? Oh, I said it was last night.
You don't hold anything back.
That's one of the beauties of podcasts. Yes, you don't have to. On the other hand, I think we need to clear certain things with Mike Thomas.
Yeah.
Thanks to Mike and Rick for putting it together. You know, Bobby, it's a lot of fun. You know, certain things that we did, we talked about some defensive zone stuff a little bit in that first one, for instance. You know, how Toronto spends more time, and we had Matt Doloff that came in who writes for the website, too, and he goes deep dive into certain things. We had a five-minute segment with him, and we talked about his articles and where he was going with it, and we had a quick hit from a guy in Toronto from a you know, just to talk about certain players on Toronto to get more involved, and so we keep to about 40, 45 minutes, hard, fast, go, little something extra, and add to the hockey talk in this town.
Excellent.
So download the Sports Hub app in the podcast section, the Hockey Show page in the podcast section. And again, we should have another one up for you on Tuesday. In addition, if you miss any or all of this show, we'll have that posted in there as well a little bit later on today. All right, Billy, before we'll get into some of the other series around the league as well, but just kind of overall takeaways of Game 1, the Kadri suspension, and, you know, how you see this series playing out after we've had a chance to see these teams play once.
I only heard a little bit of what you guys said this morning. I've been running around and on the ice and everything already, but I thought Game 1 at times was closer, I think, than some people remember. Those power plays that Toronto had, what is it, Marner missed not an empty net, but it was an open net, and there was another one. I'm biting my nails. I mean, I had some trepidation in that second period where, first of all, if I was Toronto at the end of one, Bobby, I don't know if you agree, I think you're happy with the way you played it after one. It's 1-1.
You weathered the storm.
You weathered it, right? And you actually
and
started playing better.
Yeah, and you picked up the pace and late in the first.
And control. So then second period, I'm thinking, oh, no. You know, like, here we go a bit. Now, they didn't score, so that's part of it. You know, scoring's hard at the NHL level. I love the way the Bruins, once they got through those PKs, I loved how they said, we're smelling it, we're sensing it, meaning regaining control. And then, hell, they didn't take any prisoners then. They went after it. I love that. I did catch you guys talking about Nash coming in. I will say this about Rick Nash. In all of my years, that is the most physical I can remember him in a game.
I said it last night. Doing something, I said it. I, I haven't seen all of his games, but I've never seen him that physical.
Buddy, I was like, Beersy, that was unbelievable. He was dominant physically.
Most of it in that first period, he was flying. He had a couple of good hits in behind the net, getting in on the forecheck. I'll tell you what, he took a big hit from Kadri, too.
Sure
with
did.
The knee,
yep.
With the knee.
Yeah.
You want to talk about Kadri's...
That was millimeters away from being freaking kidding me?
If he gets hurt there, that's game changer. And I couldn't believe he didn't get called for that.
Yeah, I know. It surprised me a little, too. That was like one of those in the moments. You're like, really? And then they get the hook.
Yeah.
And so then
you almost forget about it.
Right?
And then Nash went after Gardner.
Yes.
Because he had kind of gone at it with him earlier in the shift.
Rick Nash was pissed. Yeah. He was playing pissed in that game. And, I don't know if he can do it every game. And, Bobby, I had a chance to cover with the NHL Network. I did the 14.
I don't need to see the overly physical, like, running guys over. But I do want to see the winning of battles and creating scoring chances. And I think eventually, like, that's where it'll settle into. But, he's coming back. That's the first game after the concussion. He's running on adrenaline, as everybody is in the first game of a playoff series. But now, where does he go from here? Continue to do it. And, at least to a certain extent. And if he's able to create scoring chances and be dominant and cause penalties. That line caused two penalties.
Yeah. Sure.
And the Bruins scored on both of them.
But the fact, too, that he was willing to be that physical in the first game coming back off a concussion is big, too. Because
I think that was part of it.
Well, you see some guys who come back tentative, and he certainly was not that.
He heard that. I mean, meaning he heard me, whether he actually heard it or he felt it, that people were saying, how's he going to be? Because he was asked that by the media a few days before game one, after practices. How do you feel? Are you going to be? I'm sure he went out there with a little chip on his shoulder to say, I'm fine. I was saying I covered the Kings run in 14 and in 13 when they went Eastern Final and Stanley Cup, or 14. I'm sorry, it was 14 and 15. Anyways, my years are off. I've never saw him that physical. Never. I don't think he can keep it up, I just love him controlling the ice. Let me say this about Toronto. I'm sure you guys have touched on it, so sorry if it's repeating. There are a bunch of guys on their team that did not play great.
No, I wanted to get into some of that. We talked about Matthews, but I mean, the Bruins shut down. Nylander didn't do a whole lot. Marner was a little quiet, except for some of the power play chances. Van Riemsdyk?
Yeah, he got tackled by Backes, which I loved. Only because that's what you bring David Backes in for.
Well, Backes, we talked about Nash. Backes was a force, physical force in that game as well. But
they're going to play better.
They're absolutely going to
play better. They're going to play better, right? I mean, Freddie Anderson's going to play better.
You would assume so.
Right, that's my point. So anybody that's thinking that this is going to be Bruins, they did. Second, third period, they dominate. They did their job. But this is going to be a much better
team. I don't know if you agree,
team.
Billy. I think that there are two teams that are destined to make it to the second round, and that's Nashville and Winnipeg, and I'm going to enjoy watching them play against each other.
Can't wait.
I think the rest of the playoffs are still up for grabs.
The only other team I'll throw in there that I think is destined to make the second round is Pitt.
Yeah.
I do. I feel he's going to give him a hard. I still think it's no more than six, but it's going to be a.
I mean, they're favored,
six.
But it's Philly. Like, they showed a lot last night.
Provorov was good last night.
Provorov's excellent. He's a very good defenseman. But their goaltending is ultimately going to
right.
And
do you believe
no, I don't.
There you go.
At all.
There you go. Yeah, thank you. That's
not
what I mean.
All.
That's why I think Pitt.
People were asking me who I wanted to play in the first round. I said Philly.
Philly.
Not because they got an MVP candidate. They've got really good players, but I mean, I
Philly.
Just don't think their goaltending.
They've been searching for goaltending in Philly for 20 years.
Yeah, more than that now, unfortunately.
All right, so just before we get to some of those other series, the Kadri suspension.
Didn't think it would be three. I'll be very honest. I thought it would be two. I mean, I said the other night, I put out right away, I'll be shocked. This is literally minutes after it happened. I'll be shocked if he's not suspended at least a game. And I had to go over it and go over it. And then I look at him like, okay, I could see two. Three, I think, is a hell of a strong statement. I do. And
what does three translate into regular season?
Five or six.
So for a guy who's got multiple suspensions in his past... With that hit,
that's stupid, man.
In a regular season, I wouldn't have been surprised to see Kadri get five. So,
five or six, right? Yeah. So a playoff game is three. It's stupid. You know what? He lost his composure in that game. I mean, he's not their Patty Marleau has their most playoff games played. They brought him in for one of the big reasons is for his experience. Plakanet has a lot of games played. But as far as a Maple Leaf goes, correct me if I don't know.
I don't remember him being involved in a scoring chance. 5 on 5.
I don't either, but isn't he their most homegrown Leaf?
Yes.
Most games played in playoffs. Kadri?
I haven't looked that up, but okay.
Okay, my point is,
yeah,
for a guy that should keep his composure,
yeah,
he lost it. He lost it.
He played 14 plus minutes. He had no shots. He had 5 hits. You know, he hit Torey Krug a couple times in the first period. He tried to take a knee out of Nash in the second period, and you know he hit Wingles from behind.
Minutes
questionable.
Before.
I know that some people were saying it was a little bit from the side, but so he was already on edge because of that. And I thought it was a penalty, but that's
that was a classic board.
I totally agree, Billy.
Yeah.
But I heard the Canadian telecast saying it wasn't a penalty. So, so I'm trying to look at it objectively, all right? I'm saying, what is their criteria for what a penalty is for boarding? I mean, so, I'm just saying that there are people that didn't think it was a penalty. So he's already losing it at that, and then he sees Marner get hit up high, I want to say that play right there that happened to Marner happens every game to Marchand.
Yeah.
Where the defenseman is going to, they're trying to, or he's coming down the left wing boards, and they're going to try to attack him right away. What does Marchand do if he doesn't have an angle to the net? He's going to pull up.
Right.
Well, who's the guy that hits him?
Second
the forward guy. Coming late.
It's a press,
not
and
late,
finish,
but the
right?
forward coming. The, yeah,
yep.
you know the forward
coming,
with
coming
the back,
from the backside.
Right, back
yeah.
And that was Wingles. And did he get him a little high? Yeah, he did. He did. But what he did, there's no excuse for it. None. And I was glad to see the league. Obviously, we're biased, but I was glad to see the league got it right.
Well, as we said earlier,
had they
given Wingles a 2-minute minor there, none of us would have really questioned it.
No.
But
no.
that doesn't open up
no.
for...
No.
When I first saw it, I thought it was a clean hit, and then I went back and watched it, and even where we're sitting in the booth, I'm like, well, I got him a little high there. Yeah, he did. But it was worthy of a 2-minute penalty, anything.
Yeah. Listen, that
what Kadri did was...
That play happens. The Wingles play, yes, I absolutely agree that easily could have been called a minor.
Yeah.
That arm gets up high an
it
awful
did.
Lot. And
that hit happens to Marchand almost every game.
Yeah. The D that even is what do you want to call it, presses or closes, and then the second guy finishes. It's close and finish. And that's what happens. But Kadri's explanation,
I don't think
helped him either.
He's just...
I don't think it helped him.
No, he shouldn't have said anything.
Shut your mouth. It's playoffs. Shut your mouth. Say, I didn't mean to. I'm not sure what happened.
No, don't say anything.
That's it.
If he wants to comment after he gets suspended, that's different. But don't say anything after the game. Don't even open your mouth there.
I think that's the Canadian media getting him.
Well, then he's... then he's not very bright.
That's another conversation.
Or the Leafs should have kept him from saying anything about it.
Maybe,
no
maybe.
Comment.
Yep.
All right, real quick,
yeah.
There's been some other decisions or non-decisions made by Department of Player Safety early on in the playoffs as well. Doughty gets a suspension.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Wilson
did
not get one the other night for his hit on Wennberg.
Which I thought, we were talking off air, I'll speak for you here, I thought we both thought Wilson really should have gotten it.
Especially the way that he plays and some
his
of his
history.
Yeah, I mean, I like... his style most of the time, but he can go over the edge, and that looked like it was a little bit high to me.
He got Wennberg hard.
With the feet coming up in the air.
Yeah, Josh Anderson didn't get one for his hit, and I was okay with that.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with that.
The Doughty one, I guess I can say I understand what the league continues to try to do, but I don't think that when it was all said and done that should have been... I don't think so, given his no history. But we saw Backes, given his no history...
Yeah.
Get one. So this is where I get not lost in, like, I don't throw my arms up, because I do respect what the league is trying to do.
Yeah, I thought Doughty's explanation of it was pretty good.
Which part? The BS?
Which is yesterday.
Yeah. Which, yeah.
No, I mean saying that, he's coming to hit him there, and then, and he sees him coming, so he's going to try to cut back a little bit. So he alters his
the player's carrier on Vegas.
Instead of dropping the shoulder and trying to protect the puck and cut to the net that way, he sees Doughty angling him with a good angle, and he's almost kind of coming back just a little bit, like he's going to try to cut to the inside. And I'm paraphrasing, I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but I get it. I kind of
understood felt
what
like
he was
in position to make the clean body hit, and then the opponent, William Carrier of Vegas, is turning to the inside,
right.
trying to cut back to the middle.
He's not going to have the angle to the net.
All right.
And that was a big loss for them. Huge loss for not having Doughty.
No question. which series, other than, I mean, we all agree Boston-Toronto is going to be a hell of a series and going to continue to play out that way. What other series intrigues you the most that's going to go deep here in the first round?
I'm not ready to say that Vegas and LA isn't going to go deep.
Especially 1-goal games, including overtime.
Yeah,
last night.
Especially given the fact how well Jonathan Quick looked really good last night.
Yeah, it's a shame to waste that one. They could have used Dowdy in that game.
Yeah, they could have. And they had a kid by the name, Fattenberg played 40 something minutes. And here's the guy who's been in and out of the AHL. I'm not ready to say that one isn't going to go. I think Winnipeg is going to throttle Mini now. I do. Maybe Mini might win five at home. I was going to say maybe five.
Yeah, maybe.
In that. Nashville, I think it's a five gamer. I do when it's all said and done. There's just
Colorado's
not enough.
Pretty good at home ice.
Not having Varlamov and Johnson is a huge miss. I still think Pitt wins in six.
Columbus Wash?
Yeah, Columbus Wash. I have a seven. When I was forced to pick
Anaheim San Jose.
That's funny. I always forget about that.
Yeah, exactly.
I would say I had Columbus winning that series in seven, and I still do. So I'll go Columbus and Washington. I think that will be the one that will be that way.
How much pressure on Washington right now?
Huge amount of pressure.
They lose game one in overtime at home.
Yeah.
Obviously, we know their playoff history. The Caps are going to be.
Does not have a contract after this season.
Oof.
Barry Trotz's deal is up, and I think if they don't get
past
second
round,
they will
have a contract next season. Maybe just not.
I was going to say, just we don't know exactly where, season. But he will.
Would
be
they want him in
next
Dallas?
Year.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Ken Hitchcock retired yesterday.
Yes.
He's all done.
Yes, he is retired now. Congratulations to Hitch. He's a beauty. But I think this one's for real. He was going to retire after St. Louis.
He got fired.
He wanted to go out on his own terms. That was the difference.
One of the series did not come up is Tampa Bay and New Jersey. Can New Jersey provide more of a speed bump for Tampa Bay than they were in game one?
I don't know. I'm curious to see, and forgive me if they've announced it.
That game was 3-2.
It was 3-2 when Jersey came back. But did they say if they're going to start Kincaid tonight or Schneider?
I haven't seen that yet.
So I'm curious to see, because Kincaid, while he was very, very good down the stretch, taking over for Corey Schneider, who I'm not convinced is completely healthy yet. Remember the injury he suffered against the Bruins in late January? Mm-hmm. He got pulled, and he came back, and I know he's quote-unquote healthy. I don't think his game is where it needs to be because of that injury. I'm not sure that Kincaid can keep it up the way he has as a starter in the regular season versus the playoff. I'm just not sure. That's a big question mark to me. I think they can. I think they have enough speed. But when it's all said and done, I see a six-game Tampa win in that series. Maybe five even in that series.
All right, we got about 2 minutes left.
Yeah.
So let's just kind of preview tonight's game over at the Garden.
Have you guys dived in to the Komarov perhaps moving up to the top line?
Yeah,
okay. Mentioned it a little bit, but go ahead.
What do you think?
If Bruins are going to play Marchand, Pastrnak, and Bergeron against the Matthews line, then that gives them a little sandpaper up on that line, and it maybe he tries to get under the skin of some of those guys.
He's not going to try. He's absolutely going to do.
Yeah, he's good at it.
Yeah,
he's good at it. That's the way he plays. He's got that in his game.
So I look for this. What I look for, he's got decent speed, but he's more of a straight line player. Bobby,
he's not a bad player, but in the right role, he's a pretty good player.
Komarov, well, absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, if you listen to, I'll plug it again, Extra Ice Time podcast, mm-hmm. John Shannon from Sportsnet in Canada this week told us Komarov is going to be the player that the Maple Leafs want our fans to hate as much as the Leafs fans hate Brad Marchand.
Absolutely. And
that
Kadri.
he's going to be the guy.
They only have two of them.
Well,
so
you asked him about Kadri, and he downplayed it. He said, no, Komarov's the guy. He's the guy that they want to be under the skin of the Bruins.
Well, what I'm curious to see of him tonight, if the Bruins don't get involved in any of the extras, the extracurricular stuff,
if
they play, I'm curious to see if he tries to do too much. I'm very curious because he's on center stage now, so to speak, going out there against the top line. Will Marchand, if Marchand just now plays and dominates the way that he can, I'm curious to see if Komarov goes to the nth degree to show that he's doing what his coach wants him to do, meaning and going too far. So that's one thing I'm going to be looking at tonight. I'm going to be looking at as well, Bobby, early on, the Bruins did a nice job, I thought, getting the puck in repeatedly.
And again, the referees, before you go there, Billy, to add, the so each playoff series has a supervisor, and then the supervisor talks to the coaches, and then they talk to the referees, things like that. I mean, you saw Hornquist kind of embellish last night, and I know the some of the people didn't think it was embellishment. I thought it was as soon as it happened, and he's got a reputation for that, and I'm sure that they were on high alert for things like that, you know, kind of throwing his head back off the boards. And maybe that's my filter because I know that Hornquist tries to do that sometimes, so he doesn't get the benefit of the doubt in my mind. But my point is, they will be keeping a really close eye on everything that Komarov and Marchand does.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
High alert.
Sure.
And I didn't mean to cut you off on that, but that's the way each series. Each coach has gripes after each game, and they get aired to the supervisor.
The GM's phone's
the airing of grievances,
and then they get aired, and then they get conveyed to the referees that come in to do that game.
Right.
So I think watch the Bruins going after that right side of the D. I think right of the D crew of Toronto again, get the puck into that side as much as possible, whether it's a Hainsey or a Zaitsev, who actually not bad,
Zaitsev's good.
Good player. But Polak, I think they're going to attack that side.
You throw it into that side every time.
And I think on Hainsey too, and I like Ronnie Hainsey, but he's on his offside right there. I think they're going to continue to challenge that side. I mean, Gardner and Riley and Dermott are all very good skaters.
Yeah.
Good skating defense.
That's the left side.
That's the left side. All right. So I think the Bruins will continue to look to attack the right side, too.
All right, Billy. You guys are doing it. The game is on NBC Network tonight, but you guys
full hour pregame. Yeah, full hour
pre-start
at 7, full hour post as well afterwards on Nesson. Can't wait for the night tonight, 8 o'clock. I think the faceoff is actually 8:10 or 8:15 tonight.
Hockey Night in Canada.
Hockey Night in Canada and NBC. Can't wait. It's going to be awesome environment tonight at Garden.
Question about it. Beersy, we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Enjoy your podcast.
Podcast out Tuesday morning. Follow me and Billy on Twitter and get the update as soon as it's out. We'll talk to you then. Stick around for Gasper and Murray next.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, The Sports Hub.